The next case is 06-1890 and 06-2043, Taylor Building Corporation of America versus Marvin Benfield et al. Mr. Linneman.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Rob Linneman. I appear today on behalf of the appellant, Taylor Building Corporation of America. I'm joined today by co-counsel Mr. Gregory Schmidt. May I please reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal? Thank
you. Time on the clock there.
This case gives this court the opportunity to reaffirm its long-standing position favoring alternative dispute resolution. The question here today is the imposition of a standard of review for a court of appeals. And one choice will encourage arbitration. The other choice will deter arbitration and alternative dispute resolution in general.
Counsel, I'm having a hard time understanding. One choice will, you want us to say that it's an abuse of discretion standard, correct?
Your Honor, today the question is, when the court, as in this case, the trial court grants a motion to stay arbitration, what standard of review should the Court of Appeals apply when the party opposing arbitration argues unconscionability?
What if the trial court had reached the other conclusion?
Well, Your Honor, we feel it would be appropriate in that instance for the Court of Appeals to apply the more rigorous standard, the de novo standard, and I recognize that is essentially a double standard.
It is.
And there's a good reason for that, though. The Ohio Revised Code, this court, the legislature, are not neutral on the question of whether arbitration, alternative dispute resolution, serve valuable functions. This court has on many occasions by its decisions attempted to foster and encourage alternative dispute resolution, as has the legislature. The legislature's procedure for moving cases to arbitration is itself a streamlined procedure, and therefore it's inherently logical that the appellate procedure should also favor a streamlined process, which, where there is a written contract for arbitration, will favor that outcome. Now, recall that this circumstance.
Can you point to any other area of the law where we tell the Court of Appeals it's abuse of discretion if the outcome is one way, it's de novo if the outcome's the other way?
I can't point to a specific standard of review question for a court of appeals, but Your Honor, I would direct the court to the text of the Arbitration Act itself, the Ohio Arbitration Act. In that case, by the 2000 amendments, the legislature has itself imposed a double standard. Under 2711.02 of the Act, subparagraph D, the legislature would deny the right to appeal where the decision on a motion refers the case to arbitration. That order is made non-appealable. In the other circumstance, where the order is granted, the party who seeks arbitration and whose motion is denied is permitted an appeal. Now, this is a limited, this is not generally applicable. It is, the amendment refers only to construction, commercial arbitration contracts, commercial construction arbitration contracts. But nonetheless, it evidences a clear intent of the legislature to A, favor arbitration, and B, interpose that preference into the appellate procedure and into the right to the extent that it even denies the right to appeal to a party who has opposed arbitration. The appeal is not, that order is not even appealable in that circumstance.
Counsel, it's not appealable upon the order.
Agreed.
To arbitrate.
Agreed.
But after the whole process is completed, are you saying that there's no ability to appeal at that point?
No. The ultimate decision could, yes, Your Honor.
Could be
appealed. That's correct.
And the appellate process, the validity of the arbitration can be revisited.
True.
So it is appealable at some point, just not immediately.
Exactly. Fostering the goal of referring the case, consistent with this court's precedents, in an expeditious and economical manner. That's the objective that the statute seeks, that this court has sought, that the U.S. Congress has sought, that the United States Supreme Court have sought in passing acts like the Ohio Arbitration Act and like the Federal Arbitration Act.
Your argument, I have the same problem Justice Pfeiffer does, frankly. Your argument seems to me as if it is the ends justify the means, and meaning that we change legal principles to support our support of alternative dispute resolution, arbitration, mediation. There's a legal, isn't the question is whether unconscionability is a legal concept, that is the finding of unconscionability is a legal question. Is that not, do we agree that's a legal question?
Well, Your Honor, it's a mixed question of fact and law.
Well, it's the ultimate question is made by a judge, is it not?
Ultimately, that is correct. However, in this case, and there are many instances where a common law rule, a rule of law, gives way to a specific statutory objective. The legislature clearly has the power to abrogate particular rules.
Sure, but I guess my problem is that you're asking us to change a very fundamental principle of law. It seems to me that if it's a legal question, the appellate court reviews that de novo, because it's a legal issue. It's not a factual issue, and so the it seems to me the case law supports that conclusion that if it's a legal issue, the Court of Appeals reviews it de novo, decides whether or not the trial court made a correct legal conclusion, and that's not abuse of discretion, is it?
Well, Your Honor, this is a case where there's a conflict of two common law rules. There's no question that absent the defense of unconscionability, the standard abuse of discretion would apply. It's only in another case where a specific defense is raised that there is a conflict in the standards. Now, there is the way that those two resolve each other is that one is a general rule. The rule as to questions of law, as to unconscionability of contracts in general. The specific rule is as to arbitration, contracts to arbitrate. And that's where the precedent of this court in ABM Farms v. Woods comes into play. The question of the unconscionability of an arbitration contract should depend not in this case, as the Court of Appeals decided, upon the entirety of the contract, and in many cases provisions which didn't apply to arbitration and which never became effective between these parties. Rather, the question of the unconscionability of the contract should be decided based on the arbitration clause. And on this point, the legislature has interposed an obstacle.
Counsel, ABM versus Woods, though, related to fraud in the inducement, and we said you look to the arbitration clause separately to see if there was fraudulent inducement with respect to the arbitration clause. You rely heavily on that case, but this is a case involving an unconscionable contract, or so the Court of Appeals found. The trial court found it wasn't unconscionable. The Court of Appeals found it was.
That doesn't seem to fit what Woods
was about.
The holding of the ABM Farms, although it in that case it dealt with the defense of fraudulent inducement,
right.
You're exactly correct, Your Honor, but the case itself stands for the principle that an analysis of an arbitration contract, this court stated specifically that an arbitration contract is a contract within a contract, and that the analysis, the holding as a whole, counsels for a narrowing of the analysis of the enforceability of that individual clause. The statute itself is consistent with this. The Arbitration Act in Section 01 of the Act states that it identifies a provision within a contract for arbitration. It does not refer to simply an arbitration contract. Within the contract itself, within the statute itself, it identifies the prospect of severability of an arbitration clause. And this court itself has affirmed the concept of severability. So when taken together, when the ABM case is read together with the statute, it counsels for a narrowing of the analysis. I concur with Your Honor that in that particular case, the defense which was alleged was fraudulent inducement rather than unconscionability. Now, It's possible, of course, for this court to decide. What's before this court right now is a case where the motion was granted by a trial court. The motion to refer the case to arbitration by Taylor Building Corporation was granted, and I would add that this was the fourth time that a court of common pleas had enforced this particular contract. The Court of Appeals, under the de novo standard, took a broad view of this review, took the broadest possible view, to the extent even that it allowed new evidence to be considered in favor of the argument of unconscionability. It allowed new arguments that had not been presented to the trial court to be argued before.
Counsel, when a court is reviewing de novo, then it's pretty much a review of the entire record before it, correct?
Agreed, Your Honor.
And in this case, not only did they find the arbitration clause unconscionable, but it says that such unfairness permeates the contract to the extent that we find it void and unenforceable in its entirety. Accordingly, we sustain the appellant's assignment of error. So they took a pretty broad de novo approach here.
The broadest possible. It leaves us to wonder what is the outcome under there isn't a contract and there never was apparently. At the trial court, in any event, it's all the pleadings and all the claims must be reshuffled. But the fact is that demonstrates the effect of the de novo review.
But the effect here is that they go back to the trial court. Without a contract, either party to rely on a contract terms, and I guess they just proceed putting oral evidence on. Is that? Evidence of oral agreements between the parties.
Your Honor, the plaintiff in this case had a mechanics lien claim, and there were. I suppose there are equitable claims, essentially. Yes, that's the outcome here. And again, this is after this contract was affirmed three times, or excuse me, not affirmed, but enforced by three prior courts of common pleas. But the message is that the standard is excessively broad, and what the result is that parties will not choose to arbitrate. If it is a guarantee that each time you go into court under a motion under Section 02 or 03, each time the party who opposes arbitration loses on that motion, there is a second bite at the apple. There is a second trial. There is apparently new evidence permitted if the Court of Appeals precedent is to be believed, and therefore nobody who wants to gain the expeditious and economical process intended by the legislature is going to believe it. If you have to go through two appeals each time, if you have to go through two trials each time to get shipped out to arbitration, the savings are lost. The benefits of the statute are lost. And that is why this court should impose a rule consistent with the spirit of the statute. And the statute itself provides the justification for what is otherwise a general common law rule.
Why wouldn't you argue that we should just adopt the trial court's decision? Trial court found Section 411362, which is right on point, it seems to me. It says that if you have an arbitration agreement that calls for the arbitration to be in another state, it moves to this state. And the trial court said the arbitration will occur in Claremont County. That was a pretty good solution, wasn't it, for your stand?
We feel absolutely.
Nobody argues 411, and the Court of Appeals didn't refer to it, and here's a statute that on this issue seems to me to resolve the issue.
And that's precisely the type of discretion that a trial court should have in ruling on this type of question. You're exactly right. The trial court, I think, ruled consistent, the way I would argue, with ABM Farms, in that it narrowed the analysis on the arbitration clause itself, saw a provision that it didn't like, and used its own authority to craft a reasonable solution. If there are no further questions, I'll conclude my remarks there.
Thank you, Mr. Linneman.
Thank you.
Mr. White.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, counsel, Mr. and Mrs. Benfield. I'd like to answer one of the questions that Mr. Linneman brought up earlier, or one of the statements that he made with regard to this court discouraging alternative dispute resolution. And I think I quote from the Attorney General in their amicus brief that if a supplier writes a contract which has fair terms for both sides and treats his customers fairly, he should never fear a full and complete judicial review or review de novo. And that's not what we have in this case. We have a contract that when you, the court has also noticed that the issue, and counsel has pointed out that we're talking about a contract within a contract, as in the ABM Farms case. But in order to review that contract within a contract, the arbitration clause, you have to review the entire contract.
Counsel, as I question your opponent here, you're left without a contract if the appellate court's decision stands, correct?
That's correct.
You don't have a contract. They don't have a contract. Your client has damages.
That's correct.
That they're alleging. They're obviously opposing that position. How is that beneficial?
It's beneficial in that as far as our damages are significant. They built a house there that we can't use.
I understand that. But how is it beneficial for either party to now have no document that they can rely on for anything? Whereas before, you had this document that the trial court, as the chief said, carved out the solution. We just won't go to Kentucky. Any arbitration will happen here in Ohio. And, you know, that would have been to your client's benefit as opposed to the builder who's stationed in Kentucky.
With all due respect to the Chief Justice in this case, Your Honor, I think there's more to it than that. You know, we have the entire contract, as pointed out by the Court of Appeals, is unconscionable. And so if we're arbitrating this issue in Claremont County or anywhere else, we still have to deal with an unconscionable contract. And I think it's best, an unconscionable contract, which should, in this case, have been rescinded.
We would prefer
to be without a contract than to work with this contract in any court or arbitration.
Mr. White, didn't the issue come to the Court of Appeals on the motion for stay? And the Court of Appeals transcended the matter being appealed to the validity of the contract.
That was the motion that was filed, but we opposed that motion based on the validity of the contract.
All right, but your clients in the contract realized they had an arbitration agreement. They initialed it, the clause in the contract.
No question about that. They understood it. There were misrepresentations made about the arbitration clause and whether or not the arbitration clause would ever be used.
That would have been embodied in the written agreement, wouldn't it?
Pardon?
Whatever representations were made orally would have been, under the parole evidence rule, incorporated into the written agreement.
It probably should have, but it is, as in most cases, a consumer such as Mr. and Mrs. Benfield, they were unrepresented at that time and wouldn't have known that they needed to incorporate parole evidence or
is that they initialed the contract, which would be some evidence that they at least knew that if there was a dispute about this contract, it was going to go to arbitration.
Right. But they initialed it based on the fact that there were representations were made that this is not a problem you'll have to worry about in the future. We build quality homes. We don't have problems like this. We take care of
our problems. Is that in the record somewhere?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Where?
In fact, the only record we have in this case, if it calls to them with regard to the facts, is the affidavit of Mary Ruth Benfield, wherein she adopted our answer counterclaim, and in addition to that, our response to the initial motion for stay. That's the only record, and I wanted to point that out also to the court that in this case, the only facts that we're dealing with, which is why this is not an abuse of discretion standard. The only facts that we're dealing with are the facts in that affidavit.
In the Court of Appeals, you claimed this was a de novo review that this Court of Appeals did.
Yes.
And in a de novo review, is a court allowed to take in new factual evidence? Or do they take the record as they find it developed by the court and then look at the law in a de novo fashion applied to those facts?
I'm not sure I can answer that question. In this case, I don't believe the court took in any new factual evidence in this case.
But when I read the Court of Appeals opinion, the trial court said there was no evidence put in at all about arbitration costing more and being more burdensome, but the Court of Appeals made a clear finding that it was more costly and more burdensome. Where did the Court of Appeals come up with that evidence?
We presented that in the appeal itself. We presented and asked the court to take judicial notice of the cost of AAA arbitration.
How? How? What? How do they take judicial notice of something so vague?
I don't know that it is vague, Your Honor.
So your trial court made some specific factual findings The Court of Appeals seemed to disregard all of those and make almost the opposite factual findings to come up with the conclusion this contract was unconscionable. Is that what a de novo review is about, or is it a review that's supposed to look at the law as applied to those facts?
Well, any de novo review has to look at the facts, and in this case, the facts weren't in controversy. There was no, there was not an evidentiary hearing in this case. No facts were presented by the plaintiff appellant in this case.
Could your clients be guilty of fraud because your clients clearly knew there's an arbitration clause? You could argue it was just puffery that we've never had any problem. Your client signed it never intending to ever arbitrate. And so would they have signed a contract with fraudulent intent, never intending to arbitrate, because they didn't believe arbitration was should be allowed?
I can't, well, it's very difficult for me to answer that because it, in this case, when we're dealing with contracts such as this, when we're dealing with a multi-state corporation, that wrote the contract, which the court found to be an adhesion contract.
Well, your client had the right to go to many other builders in the area, correct?
They did, but I believe the
and
evidence.
And your client signed and initialed an agreement to arbitrate, correct?
Correct.
And your clients never intended to arbitrate, even though they signed
Absolutely
it.
Not. They didn't know whether they'd arbitrate or not. In fact, well, they probably didn't expect to arbitrate because they were the representation made to them, which is in the record, Your Honor. The representation made to them was that there would not be a need for arbitration or mediation because Taylor Homes built good quality homes and then stood by their product.
And their
in that case, we know not to be the fact.
And their representation back to the company is, if we have a problem that nobody else has had, we agree to arbitrate.
No question, that's there. But if the arbitration contract is unconscionable, which in this case, you know, it was a finding by the trial court that the fact that they wanted the Benfields to try this case in Jefferson County, Kentucky, as an arbitration or a mediation first and an arbitration, that in the event that contract that was thrown out, that it had to be the case, a trial had to go to be held in Jefferson County, Kentucky, and there was no right to a trial by jury. All that was within
the contract.
That was
cured by the trial court.
Pardon?
That was cured by the trial court by moving it to Ohio.
There's no question the trial court read it, but those were facts that the Court of Appeals took into account, I believe, along with all the facts in the affidavit in making its decision, which I think was properly done on a de novo basis.
Counsel, let me refer you to perhaps a little simpler issue.
Okay.
And that is, was the question of the unconscionability of the contract as a whole raised at the trial court level, or was this an issue that was first
Yes.
Raised in the,
absolutely.
Was raised at the trial court level.
Absolutely. That was the gist of the argument at that time. It wasn't just the arbitration clause, it was the entire contract. In fact, I can quote from an argument I made both at the trial court and at the Court of Appeals level where I talked about those issues and I itemized what I consider to be the unconscionable provisions in this contract. I mean, this contract was riddled with unconscionable provisions as found by the Court of Appeals.
So it would be possible not even to address the arbitration issue if the Court of Appeals was correct in finding that the contract as a whole was unconscionable.
I would say so, yes, Your Honor. Yes.
The assignment of error, though, in the Court of Appeals, according to the Court of Appeals' opinion, was the trial court erred as a matter of law in finding that the arbitration clause is enforceable. That was the only assignment of error, wasn't it? Were there others?
It was, Your Honor.
So wasn't the Court of Appeals confined to that issue or not? Can the Court of Appeals, in reviewing a contract, go beyond the assignment of error?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think it's a fairly broad assignment of error which allowed the Court of Appeals to do that.
Was it the argument that it's unenforceable because it required the arbitration, because the clause required the arbitration to occur in Kentucky, or were there other reasons that the arbitration clause is unreasonable?
Not just the clause itself, but one of the reasons, as was pointed out by Justice Pfeiffer, one of the reasons why it fits somewhat within the ABM Farms case is because we felt that there was a misrepresentation, a fraudulent misrepresentation by the salesman in this case as to the arbitration issue. There was a specific conversation between the Benfields and the company representative on that issue when they initialed the arbitration clause. They spoke of that, and in the affidavit that was signed by Mrs. Benfield, which is also, which was in the complaint itself, the complaint is very detailed and spelled out paragraph by paragraph the allegations of the defendants at that time.
But that didn't seem to be an issue decided by the Court of Appeals, was it? Whether it was fraud in the inducement or
Your Honor.
And there was no opportunity at the trial level to develop any record to cross-examine that affidavit, which pretty much was a conclusory just based on the complaint. There was no opportunity to cross-examine, create any record for the Court of Appeals to review in that regard, was
there? Well, there's always an opportunity, Your Honor. They could have.
Well, it didn't happen.
Right, it didn't happen.
So the Court of Appeals had no facts that were under any cross-examination to look at. It had a complaint verified by an affidavit, and that was their basis of their factual record, correct?
Well, and in this case, that's the only record we have.
Mr. White, what is the objection to arbitrating? I mean, you suggest that you have a home that's built that you can't use and all the problems. What's the objection to arbitrating that matter in a forum under the rules of the American Arbitration Association?
The fear in this case is because of the nature of this contract and whether or not an arbitration panel, rather than a court, a judge, would be able to review what we consider to be the unconscionable provisions in the contract appropriately.
Well, isn't the whole issue the fact that the house takes on water? Is that right?
It's more than that, Your Honor.
Well, according to what I've read, they want the house bulldozed and start over again, correct?
The house more than takes on water. There are problems with. There's a whole litany of problems, which I'd be happy to go over with if you'd like.
But those don't go to the unconscionability of the contract. It goes to the damages that your client suffered, which they could present to an arbitration panel, it would seem to me. And I guess I don't understand why it is. We've got a contract that says we're going to arbitrate. Your clients have initialed the arbitration clause. Why couldn't you present fraud claims to an arbitration panel or the rest of the issues?
I've done that before. I'm sure you've done it before in your legal career, but it does happen. But in this case,
look at the color of my hair. I'll tell you something.
But I'm certain that arbitration is good in many cases. As I've indicated, I've arbitrated cases before. But I think in this case, the parties in this case, once realizing the type of contract that they had, wanted a court to rule on the case rather than an arbitration panel to rule on the case. There were some very difficult legal issues here, which you never know what you're going to get with a AAA arbitration panel.
Mr. White.
You could have lawyers, you could have non-lawyers.
Mr. White, this contract is mainly a boilerplate contract, is it not?
It is a contract, yes.
I mean, it's a form that's used in the industry, and there have been other courts that have looked at the contract and not found it unconscionable?
Well, I don't think they've looked at this particular contract on an appellate level until this case. I'm not aware of it if it has.
This is the first time that this particular language has been determined to be unconscionable. Is that correct?
I've not found any other indication. There have been a number of lawsuits on the common pleas level that have gone different ways, but in different states. This is, as I indicated, the state built houses in Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois. And so it was, I'm sure it's been looked at in other areas besides Ohio, but I think the problem with this case, I believe, was just in general the provisions in the contract, one provision in particular, the requirement that we pay their attorney fees for them to enforce their rights under the contract.
That's and what I was going to ask. It's if you would tick down through right. Well, what makes it unconscionable, I assume the attorney fee provision is one of the
things.
It
has to be. Just if you read that provision in the contract, it doesn't even require them to prevail. It just requires, we have to pay their fees. Obviously, we have to pay our own fees. We have to pay their fees if they go to court, and it doesn't require them to be prevailing party.
Although that provision could be severed from the remainder of the contract, could it not?
It could have. The trial court had the opportunity to sever that along with a number of things. The only thing the trial court severed was the issue involving where the arbitration would take place.
Counsel,
we argued all that in front of the trial court.
Back to what happens if this is out, my reading of what they filed was the cause of action alleged a complaint or breach of contract, unjust enrichment, and quantum merit. So there are other causes of action alive that would allow recovery of what is fair to this builder.
To the builder.
Without a contract.
Right. To the builder and to the, in this case, the Benfields.
Yeah.
You know, we'd prefer to be without a contract than to be stuck to the terms of this contract. With the terms.
But, I mean, their action, they asked, they provided other means for recovery if there's no contract.
That's correct. Under the law, they are. So.
Thank you, Mr. White.
Thank you.
Mr. Linneman, you saved a little less than a minute of your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Your Honor, Taylor Building Corporation does not fear judicial review. The question is not whether it's afraid to come in front of a court or not. The question is whether it chooses to come in front of a court. And if this process takes just as long as litigating the underlying dispute, that's what Ohio's contractors will do. This court has the ability to impose a policy that encourages them to make use of alternative dispute resolution, and it should do it here.
Well, counsel, would you agree that there's some contents of this contract that would scare a homeowner with regards to what am I getting myself into if I complain or take this to court? The legal fee provision, for example, going to Kentucky when, you know, that's out of state. I mean, all these things certainly are red flags to a couple trying to build a home. Would you not agree?
Your Honor, I see my time has lapsed. May I quickly respond to your question?
You may answer the question.
Thank you. Well, first, I would posit that many of these are questions for an arbitrator, questions which this court and the legislature has deemed arbitrators competent to handle. Second, the provisions themselves, I mean, just for, on a substantive level, attorney's fees have been affirmed by this court in the Nottingdale homeowners case, where it was a residential homeowner where the attorney's fees was applicable against them. Second,
who prevailed in that?
I did. This court ruled that attorney's fees provisions in the contract were enforceable. I've never researched to see who ultimately prevailed in the trial court. But second, this is a particularly ironic outcome because the Court of Appeals has held that this attorney's fees provision is unconscionable, and yet under the mechanics lien statute, Taylor is going to be able to has a right to attorney's fees anyway under Section 1311, Section 11. So we have unconscionable attorney's fees, which come from this contract, apparently contradictory to this court's holdings. Then we have statutory attorney's fees, which will then apply in the absence of the contract. So there are many examples of that where the Court of Appeals' analysis was so broad, so sweeping, so outcome-based that it overlooked the lack of in many cases, of the application of this contract to these parties. For instance, there's, you know, a savings clause where the contract says, if this arbitration clause is deemed to be unenforceable, then there is litigation or there are provisions about the subsequent litigation. Now, clearly, that's a prescient clause in this case. This court and Taylor had been through this before, but that clause was grounds for a finding of unconscionability. The key here is that the review that the appeals court deemed itself empowered to undertake was so broad and so sweeping that it discourages arbitration as a whole. The pinpointed question before this court is what to do when the motion is granted, and we suggest that it is the abuse of discretion standard.
Thank you, Mr. Linneman. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.